Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. This is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you support the fact that I just make sure that, you know, whole bunches of different people, most of which you might not have even heard of, if you like the idea of unknown voices exposing vast, copious quantities of scumbaggery in intricate detail, because the mainstream media and the court system and various other apparatuses of the system won't let them, that's kind of the whole point of the show, as well as laughing your ass off at the same time, so that way you disarm all that fear and that anxiety and that depression, and because, you know, look, at this stage in the game, anybody who's been listening to the show for a long time knows that things are bad, worse than bad, as they say in network. And if you don't have your sense of humour, you will go friggin' nuts. It's simple truth. Everybody knows it. And I believe that this kind of radio should be replicated by many other radio talk hosts and what have you, to bring this element of comedy and just general mental longevity into people's lives. Little long-form interviews where you get those really graphic, explicit details that really stick in your mind and actually connote some form of understanding of the subject matter that isn't suppressed into audio nibbles or interruptions by an overbearingly egotistical, megalomaniacal host. All right? Who doesn't seem like a host, more like a parasite. You know the kind of people I'm talking about, don't you? Don't you? My very special guest today is going under a pseudonym. Atlantis Rose, or just Rose for short, and I'd like to welcome her now back to the show. We were having a conversation during the break about psychopaths, archons, the Gnostic writings and all of these kind of things, and the type of personality, what it's actually like to go up against one of these creatures. And I think, Rosie, you've got a few words to say about that, don't you?
Well, my take on the archons and all Jay Widener's exceptional work on the texts and people like John Namlash, is that recently it was communicated that the freedom fighters in the Gnostic texts were actually called anarchists. So here we've got a concept of the word anarchy, like the word conspiracy, has been used, turned around by mainstream and made into a negative context. So you've got, actually, the word anarchy was the name for the freedom fighters who fought the archons in the Nag Hammadi Gnostic texts. And that makes perfect sense to me, because you have the word conspiracy, which has got a negative connotation on it. Since the Kennedy death, Congress came out in 1978 and admitted that he was killed by a conspiracy. And ever since then, there's been a concerted, concentrated effort by the people who run the world to change the word conspiracy into a negative term that can be associated with being crazy or mentally ill, etc., etc. If you want more on that, I'd suggest you listen to John B. Wells' last interview with Professor Philip. Absolutely extraordinary interview. Gives you much more detail on this type of neural linguisting programming.
Now, don't you think it's a brilliant idea that if you were a psychopathic scumbaggery individual and you wanted to concoct schemes and what have you without being exposed, why wouldn't you develop the resources to make the terms that would expose you, the very terms themselves, any definition of what it is that you're doing, and turn it into pure insanity? So if anybody ever heard it, you'd be seen as crazy.
Well, it's just like Jay Widener says, his motto is, those ideas that are the most suppressed are the truth. And once they officially deny it, you can pretty much bet your Bitcoin, bottom dollar Bitcoin on that it's the truth. Okay. Once the White House comes out and actually makes a statement to deny UFOs or to deny anything, you can pretty much take your Bitcoin to the bank on that's true. So I go by his motto, those ideas that are the most suppressed of the truth, and in the vein of Daniel Estulin, who was also recently on Coast, the Bilderberg expert, he very eloquently explained that, you know, you type in the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers, you'll get 200 million hits. And what he explained is they're new money. They've been around for a couple of hundred years. He said, what you really need to worry about is people like the Frescobaldis of Italy, who own 80% of Italy's land, who are money going back to the times of Christ. Okay. And his analogy was, you type their name in, and you get one hit and little bit of information about a vineyard. So he said, as they say, the monarchies, the public figures like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, they're all seen. He said it's the guys way above that.
So
that
it's
you Google them, they're not there.
It's like layers upon layers of front men and PR people to prevent you from getting to the CEO of the corporation Earth.
More or less, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you ever try to get a hold of anybody who's particularly famous?
And Daniel's quite right. This whole thing is absolutely frightening. You've got 2,000 years of wealth and power and secret society knowledge and different set of physics, secret set of physics. You've got Richard Dolan's breakaway civilization. And with people like Daniel coming out, explain, hey, you Google these guys. They're the guys you need to worry about. They wouldn't even come up on the internet. They're above these guys. They've got knowledge back to the times of Christ. They've had the wealth back till then. So these are your archons. These are your Nazi, NSA, superclass. These are the people that before the end of World War II, before the Vatican issued passports to get the Nazis to Argentina, there were 1,500 Nazis in New Mexico. We see the Wernher von Brauns. We don't see the underground Nazis. So it went worldwide, and the eugenics program never stopped. It's now transhumanism. It's now cyborg. If you listen to Ian Wishart, who I recently listened to on Coast, he said, there's a group, this family that I was connected with, there's a global group who want to become the transhuman gods, and we become the peasants. And most people don't know about artificial intelligence, how scary it is. They don't understand, the average man on the street does not understand, they're 40 to, I'd say 80 to 100 years ahead of us in secret technology. I agree with John B. Wells, they're out there, they're already mining the Saturn's rings. There's too much evidence in the United States with all the secret military aircraft they've gotten. We're looking at a group of really scary people who, it's just the Nazi eugenics, the Dr. Mengele stuff on steroids. So now with technology trebling, every time there's an advancement in technology, the progress of technology advancing exponentially is trebling each time. So when they had the internet in the 60s at 2YK speeds, when they had all this other secret, when they had the Nazi bell, D-Glock from the Germans after World War II, those guys killed 60 scientists, German scientists. They didn't care if America got submarines and Russia got other, you know, their warcraft. They did not want the anti-gravity gateway technology. They wanted to keep it secret so the Vatican dispersed this even. Germans were even dispersed to the Middle East. You've got the Muslim Brotherhood that are basically Nazis. You've got Mossad. I don't want to alienate everybody, because in every organisation, even the NSA, there's good people and evil people, right? There's good and bad. You listen to Susan Lindau, her interview, she was an intelligence asset. She was trying to do the right thing. She says most of the intelligence community didn't want 9/11 to happen, but the corporate media blocked it for their superiors that decide whether they live or die or get a paycheck.
And indeed, there was a reporter from the CNN who came out and said we were paid to put certain stories out.
John talks about Amber Lyons, who was a very brave woman, came out, interviewed with him and said, yes, we're paid to not run stories and we're paid to run stories. And she stepped right away. And so it's just the average man on the street doesn't know this because we're all subverted into paying our mortgages, getting our children off to school. You know, you're tired at the end of the day. Most people watch mainstream news and they're just being fed baby food, baby mash.
Yeah.
And they don't know. But that these sorts of people that are coming out are very brave, because in the 90s they used to end up in the Hudson River. Today, with technology, the internet's sort of gone. It's a double-edged sword for the superclass, because the more public you become about these things, the less likely you are to be harmed.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, of course, you've got cancer like me and they can just isolate you in a state house and keep you isolated and in a under house arrest and under stress, so that your immune system's down and your disease spreads, because your child's constantly emotionally, physically at risk, and the only way that you can help her is if you say yes sir, no sir, three bags full sir, and you're a slave.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to, I just want to wrap up on the mental health psychiatry industry, is that system is incredibly corrupt, incredibly abusive, incredibly cruel. We all know now about education on SSRI drugs. Luckily, we don't have them advertised in New Zealand yet, but in the States,
under the TPPA agreement, yeah, I can guarantee you they probably will start.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever goes into the UK and America eventually comes here and comes to the Five I countries.
Mm-hmm. Or vice versa.
I think Ian Wishart said we're a good test case, New Zealand. Small population. What people aren't aware of is we're the test case before it goes into America, and then it'll officially be brought in here. Where you've got John Key, Obama's Key to Down Under, I call him. Where you've got him just blatantly dismissing the public. He can push through whatever. You know, 90% of Kiwis voted no spy bill. Let's just dismiss them and ignore them. They're the peasants. I like hanging out with Obama and George Clooney when I go to the States. My presentation style is that of an 80s used car salesman. That's something that I can't, as a trainer and developer who's coached presentation styles, I wish he had a really good coacher like Obama does. Obama's so smooth,
mm-hmm.
whereas John Key can just get away blatantly with having this very 80s used car salesman type presentation style with a red tie.
So Obama is menthol and John Key is drum.
Well, that's a very good way to put it. Obama is very hypnotic with his speeches, even if they are off a teleprompter.
Well, I think it's hypnotic because his head bobbles from side to side. Like, you ever have those little bobblehead thingies in your car? You know, the head goes up and down and up and down. He's like a Barack Obobble.
He goes from side to side
to each teleprompter when he speaks.
That's very interesting, Vinny, because somebody was just saying the other day on alternative media that, I think it was Dr. Bill Deagle on Jeff Rentz, he said, you know that bobbing motion they make at the wall? In Israel, he said that's a phallic bowing to Draco Pindar, the golden phallic symbol. He said that's actually a very bobbing the head towards the wall. So I can really identify with that, because I've got a few pictures up on my Facebook of Obama and Clinton and the Japanese Prime Minister all bowing at the wall in Jerusalem, and that is, to me, that's symbolic of Wall Street.
Yeah.
Okay, and we all know John Key has a conflict of interest there with the Bank of America, but he doesn't have to. He doesn't have to answer questions. He doesn't have to be held accountable for anything. I think that seriously, we could do better than that. We could really do need to contract somebody like me and to teach him a better presentation style, so he's really smooth.
Well, maybe that wouldn't be such a great idea, because the smoother he is, the easier it goes down in a phallic sense of the word.
Yeah.
And speaking of fracking the country, we've got quite a significant problem here with this pedophile ring running around, which you've actually this is the first time you've ever actually really spoken out about this. I mean, nobody knows who you are. And nobody knows exactly who you're talking about, but this is just one a little teensy bit of a detailed story, one that I'm very sure is replicated among hundreds, even thousands of New Zealand families around the country, around the clock. And in my opinion, it's probably the story which needs to be told, not necessarily because it's pleasant to hear, in fact, the direct opposite, because it's not pleasant to hear that it's going on. Hopefully, because of expanded public awareness on these issues, there might actually be a kick that happens when people suddenly wake up and realise the world ain't all sunshine and rainbows.
Okay. I'll take it back to Bill Maloney, UK, ritual satanic abuse with the Jimmy Savile case. He's come out recently. He said every Western country with a democratic system is invaded with this ilk, with this illness at a political level. Now, the reason that most people don't buy into this is because visual is your first dominant sensory perception when you're learning and taking information in. We constantly see brown people, it's like in the States, for the constantly see brown people being trotted out for these crimes. So that visual is taken in while you're cooking the dinner every night at 6 o'clock. And so when somebody says, somebody high up in politics or judicial system or of a high ranking stature in society is doing this, you're not believed. It's how dare you say this about this wonderful person that put through, you know, does such wonderful work in their vocation and has got Queen's medals for it or honours for it. And so you're simply not believed because I'm from a teaching background, and in the classroom we teach that the five senses is how you learn, sight, sound, taste, touch, smell, in that order. Visual is the most impactful. You keep seeing this visual of a brown person who's molested a child. You never see the white people. Why do you never see the white people? Very rarely are the Jimmy Savils of this world caught because they're protected, because everybody's got dirt on everybody else. You don't write this report and cover this up, we'll show your niece doing a line of cocaine at a nightclub in Brazil. You know, this is what the spying has been going on since the end of World War II. We've only just found out about it through Edward Snowden, and people are too busy to keep focused on this most important topic. So what happens is these people are given positions of power. Now, they might not actually be committing the offence themselves or the gruesome act themselves, but they're in those families where, for example, my ex-partner's family, his uncle on the grandmother's side is a sir, he's knighted. My daughter disclosed in 2004 the year he was due to take office. He flew up and instructed them how to use the systems against me to cover it up. I was taunted about this day and night while I went through mastectomy. I was psychologically abused over it while being harmed myself. I was told, you know, my uncle says that you won't get cleared by mental health, and my people this and my people that, and I was told that my cancer would be irrelevant in family court. And 10 years down the track, I have to say it was. This particular sir in their family knew his stuff, for sure. So what essentially happens is...
Can I say, he probably knew his stuff for sure because he'd done it before.
Well, also because he writes the law to protect the corporate thieves, to protect the child molesterers, to protect that circle. So they embellish a lot of stuff. This family is quite psychopathic. They're into self-aggrandization. They'll pick and choose their cases so publicly they get all the applause and all the worshipping for having, say, revised, say, the Burial Act in such a fantastic way. So that when you go into the systems in New Zealand, you say, this person's part of that, you're not believed. Oh, but he does such wonderful work. But behind closed doors, they won't pick up that woman who's in the mental health system whose child's been harmed at his brother-in-law's church. They'll make sure that Professor so-and-so will write a separate report saying that that mother's dangerous to her child. and that mother may not know when she's in the family court that this document's being bandied about. How do they do that? Because, Professor, if you don't write this, we might just mention to your board about your little alcohol problem and your addiction to hookers. It's the same thing over and over again. Blackmail has never stopped. It's been going on since World War II with J. Edgar Hoover. You know, there's good examples there with the Kennedy, if you look into Kennedy's whole scenario. Now it's worse because of the technology we've got. It's way worse. As we speak, we're being stored in Utah. A huge database paid for by the taxpayers, the middle class in America that is suffering, and they've got no control. We need to turn this ship around. We need to turn this boat around. So getting back to the Five Eyes, because we're talking about the British Empire never went away, okay? The concentrated wealth of the 1%, the 1,000 of the 1%, 85 families are in control of this world. We're talking about the Frescobaldis that are above the people we see publicly that you can't find on Google. And that each one of those people has got the same collective wealth of 440 million people. Now that's just amoral and that's just wrong. And even the Pope's talking about it. And I appreciate that, but we know the Pope has also got his public relations team. Okay? That makes him look good. I'm not saying he's a good guy or a bad guy. You can never really know unless you're on the inside circle, right? I digress. Getting back to these paedophile rings that are rife throughout Canada, New Zealand, Australia. For example, the other day I heard a story of another woman, same situation as me. Never saw her child again, couldn't go to when the child turned 25 and took her life, because with these multiple fractured personalities that they set up in the child during, they either turn them into a suicide person or another alter personality that's loyal to them and will protect them. Their brain is compartmentalized, early childhood development with the brain. When they're being emotionally murdered behind closed doors with the threat of a parent going south in the event that they speak up, or that the developing child's brain fractures into alter personalities. They just need a trigger word, and the grandmother was a speech therapist, and even at times I'd find her octaves in her voice very harsh. Being a teacher, I'd pick up on the sound, visual then sound, and go, what's going on here? So there's trigger words of tones to trigger her son and her grandchild into loyalty mode, and then they're off. And then they can be put into disassociative identity mode, where there's a look that comes over my ex-partner like a wax museum figure, where he's cold and clammy and he's emotionally detached, the psychopathic mode, when I look at the body language. So there's all this family ritual abuse going on, right? And then all the victims get put through the systems to cover it up, so...
You're familiar with MK Ultra, you know, the CIA mind control programs.
Yes.
Now, they used ritualistic abuse in order to split the personalities of these mind control victims in order to have control modes and these modes that you're just talking about.
Yeah.
One would think that because of the huge quantities of drugs that are used in the MK Ultra programs and the alleged shutting down of MK Ultra, that there were an awful lot of scientists and experimenters and people who are in the know that actually started to use and filter out these practices to the general public, not only through the psychiatric industry, but through the political elites as well, using their children.
Absolutely. As I said to you off record during the break, we have got ex-military, USA military psychiatrists in New Zealand. Most of our bright and best modernised psychiatric students are horrified when they're doing their student time in our facilities and institutions that we have in New Zealand. They leave the country and they go to other countries. For example, Australia's psychiatric system is much more modernised. A lot of the drugs we use here are illegal over in Australia. They're shocked that we're still using them. Very antiquated, archaic, brutal, cruel, psychiatric. You could equate it to the 1920s type of, you know, electric. While I was in there, I was horrified that people were getting electric shock therapy. Okay? To me, that's in a movie from the 1920s. That's in a horror movie. This was 2004. There were rumours of people being too scared to take their sleeping pills because there were certain nurses that would rape them. And I'm not alienating every nurse in that place. There were only a couple that I could see really needed to be on the other side of the psychiatric desk. Okay? But that was enough. You only need one bully or one misogynist with the power of drugging people in a place like that, and you're destroying lives, destroying minds, destroying souls. I saw a woman on the floor who was in agony, wailing about blinding white migraines because they were injecting her. As soon as I scooped her up into my arms off the floor, because she was being treated like less than an animal, they'd walk over her and ignore her. As soon as I scooped this woman up into my arms, they looked at me like, that just proves you're crazy. Because she just picked up the most mentally ill person in the unit. What it was that nobody would help her make a phone call to get her money out of her bank. And she had this blinding, excruciating, painful, white blinding light headache. And that was why after I got out, I asked my social worker, what's going on there? She said, drug experimentation, 15 years, they'll never get out. There were two individuals in that place who had been totally, totally destroyed, totally had their minds destroyed. Mm-hmm. It was very, very sad. So you've got military coming in from the USA. You've got military site. You've got one of my doctors was contracted because they've got nobody stays here. None of the youth who are onto it switched on want to stay here. They want to go and work for a more modern in Canada. They want to go and work with people who work psychiatrics now sometimes work with holistic. That's where that should be. You know, it should be more modernized. What you've got is I had a Burmese doctor who was chauvinistic, fascist, misogynist, completely swayed by the higher-ups in the in-laws family, he wasn't impartial. He didn't ring anybody on my side to check fact, just completely wanting to do me over, and I'd hardly ever met this. He was horrible man. You get a court case after 3 weeks. There's a judge, a district court judge there. He stuck his hand up and said, clearly she's in the wrong system. Clearly it's a case for SIFs and the police. And the Burmese psychiatrist can overrule the judge? How does that work? What's the point in even having a judge there? And that's because, well, the judge doesn't have psychiatric knowledge. Well, what's the point in having him there if his judgment and his wisdom is that this woman is obviously not mentally unwell, she's obviously got stuck in the wrong system, she's obviously a clear cut and dried case for SIFs and the police, child, youth and family and the police, but this Burmese guy, he's taking all the phone calls from Sir So-and-so and QSM for children and the higher-ups in my in-laws family to keep me in. Okay, so the senior doctor at the back of the room sticks his hand up and saves my life, sticks his hand up and overrules the Burmese doctor. And when I talk to other students, when I talk to other students about this, the modern, you know, forward-thinking, normal, run-of-the-mill university student doing time, they said that Burmese doctor's revolting. You know, they told me all the dirt on him. They said he's just horrible. We call him. They had nicknames for him. There are some very ill individuals that are being contracted into our system who work with the pharmaceutical industry, who are about the money, who are about protecting paedophile rings and corruption and theft for people in government, high up in the police, high up in SIFs, high up in, say, even Save the Children Fund.
Well, can I ask you, ask any normal person, do you support and want to protect organised paedophilia rings? No, nobody would say
I
yes.
I don't think you'd get anybody's vote on that.
No, I don't think so. Therefore,
except for Arthur C. Clarke, who, you know, lobbied for it in the 60s and... Yep.
Now, therefore, if you wanted to run such a ring, every single person who might complain to you about the existence of a paedophile ring has to be on the take in order for it to continue.
They're either on the take, taking...
Or can be intimidated.
Well, more often than not, it's the spying they've got on the family members. Say you've got a really good politician who's got a really good heart, clean record, not about the money, right? But everybody in their family has somebody who's dysfunctional, right? So they get the dirt on the sister who's had a really dysfunctional life, who's been charged and convicted for drugs or something, or done something. And then they blackmail, and that person has put in their life's work to get to where they are. And then it becomes personal, because you love your sister's children and this is going to affect them about their mother, and they've been through enough with what your sister has put her children through. This is just an analogy. I'm not talking real life story here. This is an analogy. That's how it works. Now, at that point, most people, good people, will give in, because it becomes about the interpersonal relationships within their family, okay? They're probably worried about their niece or nephew having serious emotional problems over the exposure of their mother having done all this criminal activity. I mean, I have it in my family. There were only two good people in my immediate family. The rest of them were crooks, okay? And so their reputation affects my reputation. What I am sad to see in that situation is that a good person should go, no, I need to continue doing the right thing. Even if this is going to be hell and it's going to be horrible, I need to actually be in my conviction step. Because the minute you allow yourself to be intimidated by that, you're done. You know, you'll never ever. I understand why people do it. I understand why, if their loved ones are threatened, course. I mean, you know.
Well, the Romans actually figured this out quite well. They said, if you want to control the women, threaten the children.
Absolutely.
And once you control the woman, you control the men.
And I would absolutely add to that, if you want to see somebody, this is what the misogynists do. And I think misogynists, in the case of these types of subhumans, is even too good a word for them. This is what they do. I really hate her. She's a good person. She always does the right thing. I can't even get her to screw up at any stage, right? She always does moralistically the right thing, right? So they hate you so much that, where was I going with this? I've just lost my train of thought. I could make her suffer, right? But the better way to make her suffer is watch somebody she loves deeply suffer. And that was my child. That was the way to get me to lose my mind. Was, you want to hurt, what's really evil about these subhumans we've now got running their agenda all over this planet, is that they know that if you're a strong person, probably making you suffer is not going to work 100%, but if they can make somebody you love, who's a just defenseless small child, if you have to watch your child beg to her father, please, please don't hurt mummy, and you see your child in psychological pain that most 40-year-olds wouldn't be able to cope with, that makes you suffer to the extent that is a million times more. Like, so here's an analogy. If I got raped, I'm an adult, that'd be horrible, and I'd probably go through some issues with it and get some counselling, but most people come out the other side, they handle it. When you've got a child that's being harmed, and you're watching them psychologically suffer on a level most adults couldn't cope with, that's what's going to give you the instinct to kill. Then I suddenly understood at 40 years old, now I understand war. Once you start killing people's children and raping people's children because they're brown or they're Jewish or they're whatever your prejudice is, that's when the other side brings some, you know, that's why we've got Al-Qaeda. That's why we've got all these proxy wars on the ground. People, I think somebody was saying it really intelligently the other day. The Germans, Holocaust with the Jews, and now the Jews are doing it to the Palestinians, and then the Palestinians will come resentful, and they'll, it's like passing it on, passing the illness.
Not breaking the cycle.
On. Once you start harming people's children, that's it. People lose all their composure. They lose their mind. I mean, I admit I lost my mind over it. You'd be something wrong with you if you didn't.
Yeah, exactly,
okay?
Yeah.
And yet they're saying there's something wrong. The psychiatric industry will say there's something wrong with you because you did. If you're crying, if you're angry, you're mentally ill. No, well, there's actually a really good reason. If I was ever going to lose my mind, it would be over this, something like this. So what I would say to you is I'd take that one step further and say, this is how... this is how crucially evil these people are. They're not just psychopaths. They're not just insane. They actually get their physical and psychological jollies off watching you suffer. They actually get an endorphin hit to the brain, and this is why... what is this? Less about sex and more about watching the child suffer and getting... a power hit to the brain, like a cocaine hit, like a drug to the brain, of watching them suffer.
We had this Archon roundtable discussion, and what some of the researchers were saying and postulating is that there's a certain frequency, a certain energy wave that gets off when the brain starts feeling afraid or something of that nature, and these creatures actually feed off of that energy. They actually need it to survive.
Yeah, well, when you talk about... science has proved, quantum mechanics has now proved there's 11 dimensions as such, and the human eye can only see 3D, right? If we could see everything, we'd go nuts. We'd be, like, crazy, because, you know, we'd see all the other dimensional entities that go from demonic to angelic, which the Gnostic texts, I believe, also speak of. What happens is, we now have Kerlane photography, we've had it for years, where I can take a photo of your auric field, right? So the auric field, in the 80s, it was like all dismissed as New Age bullshit. We now have scientific, sorry for swearing, we now have scientific proof with Kerlane photography. What happens is a child's aura is extremely bright. When Jay Widener talks about the chi, these pedophiles are taking the life force off that child, because when they get frightened, the body is flooded with adrenaline and chemicals and hormones and fear. And some people talk about that actually being like heroin or cocaine to them, right? Which is absolutely correct, right? But what's happening is that child's auric field, if you saw it under Kerlane photography, very bright. And whereas me, I've had surgery, you'd see a few dents here and miscolouring where my surgery's been. You'd see different colours mean emotional health and all that type of thing. When a small child is, they're the closest to heaven. When you come in, you're the closest to heaven. And when you go out, you get closer to the other realms, okay? So when they come in, they're very, very bright. Their chi's very, very bright. And this is what they're taking. And it's to restore their own auric field. This is why these families have unnatural long life. Like I went to, this family was morbid about church. It was like, they loved christenings. They loved doing all their speeches at funerals and christenings. Anybody got married and was in love? They hated going to weddings. They were always sabotaging and talking in corners. And their body language was very uncomfortable at weddings, because a wedding is about being in love, right? And I figured all this out later on, because I was never quite comfortable with this whole church thing. I was brought up free to choose, you know, free to choose what, and I don't judge other people. But that was what, when I look back, when I look back at my videos, they were even doing, the Anglican priest was even doing, who was their priest, was even doing ritual with my child's baptism, which I never wanted. I was kind of like coerced into it. And then he didn't hand my child back to me because I'm brown. He handed it to my sister-in-law. You can see it on the video. He just completely ignored me. So he was a Nazi racist, Aryan race, Anglican church priest of theirs. But getting back to the auric field, right? So what? Once that child's emotionally murdered, if you like, there's no other better way to put it, emotionally murdered behind closed doors, right? As well as physically. If you took a photo, these start to be cracks in the auric field from the damage, and this is where the entities attach. This is where, to my understanding, they come in and attach to your auric field.
They another part of the Archon discussion we were having, and also psychopaths, is In fact, we had three different separate panels of people, one talking about psychopaths, one talking about archons, and one talking about djinn.
Wow.
And one
said, djinn. Genie.
Yeah.
Middle East. Yeah.
And what they all had in common, and what all of these different researchers from these different fields, panel discussions, all of them, is that these things are parasitical and they can replicate themselves and attach themselves to other people.
Yep. For example, I one of my sisters is a 30-year alcoholic. She's a functional alcoholic. Goes to work 4 days a week, and then the other 4 days, totally drinking nonstop. When she's drunk, you can see. I do a bit of kinesiology, balancing people. I could see. Well, I was waiting for her head to spin round like The Exorcist. I could see she was actually physically getting shoved by these entities. Like I was trying to. She was drunk, and I was trying to get her onto the massage table to balance her. And I actually saw her physically shoved off the bench. It wasn't her that fell; she was shoved. So when she starts drinking, her whole, if you think of the Earth's magnetic field going down, her whole auric field, shields down, Scotty, they come in. Because when I've worked on people on the table, you can actually feel their angelic guides pushing you to that end of the body to work reflexology on the feet. If you're really good at tuning in to those, the angelic help, when you're working on people on a massage table, they'll shove you towards that end. You instinctively know to go to the head or go to the feet. When I watch an alcoholic who's drinking 4 days in a row and their shields are down, Scotty, you can, if you stand back, you can see it all. I don't have the gift of actually seeing the entire. You can see all the shoving and pushing and all the psychological illness in the alcoholic. In psychiatric units.
Yeah, well, one of the things that
infested
came up was apparently the drugs that will be most effective at opening you up to possession is alcohol and crystal meth.
And SSRI, for sure.
Yeah.
Yep, definitely. And so, again, when you go into these mental institutions, even if they're abandoned, you can... It's palatable. You can feel the dark energy and residue left behind. I mean, there's some incredibly horror stories that go on with people, you know, suiciding and cutting themselves up and all that sort of thing. So these alcohol, and, you know, they won't... Look, they outlawed marijuana, right? Have you ever seen anybody get violent on that?
No.
Hardly ever. Only when they mix it with alcohol.
Yeah.
And yet they're still allowing alcohol to be legal. We've got Judge Gray in the United States who ran for Senate who's trying to say, you know, my couple of glasses of wine, my drug of choice is way worse than me putting young Mexican men in jail for marijuana. He said alcohol's way more violent, there's way more violence. And yet, so everything's back to front. Everything's back to front for us.
Satanic and
vermin. The archons turn everything ass about face.
Because they can't create anything.
War is
new.
Peace. War is peace. Freedom, you know, slavery is freedom.
Ignorance is strength.
And it all. Getting back to these government rings, right? I have it on good authority, and I can't say the name of the person that's advocating for me. I have it on good authority, just as in other countries. You've got your good folk and your bad folk from the Prime Minister down through the judicial system, through the police system, through the CIFS childcare system, through the family court system. New Zealand's very small, which makes it quite bad. But you've got the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Mm. Now, the system's kind of ugly. Now, in terms of your personal story and your personal struggle, it's not yet over, is it? You're still under house arrest and dealing with this on a daily basis?
We're talking about nearly 10 years ago I got out of this institution drug-free, just on sleepers. I was threatened by my ex-partner if I didn't shut up about the child abuse, he'd throw me back in there. I was horrified because it was out of character. He'd never shown me this insane side of him, so I was quite frightened. I said to him, "You can't throw me back in there." I got out drugs-free, and that just made him even 10 times more violent. I handled the situation. I put the house on the market. I said, "You're not going to support me and my daughter. going to put the house on the market, and then I found a lump in my breast, and I've never been. I'd call myself agnostic, but I believe in something. I believe not in a God with a beard like the Old Testament. I believe in light as God, you know, universal light. I got on my knees. I fell to my knees, and I prayed, and I said, "This is God says He doesn't give you anything that you can't handle." And so where I was at that point was, this is, I mean, I've got, my partner's turned into the Joker off Batman, and he's got this demented grin on his face. I've never seen that facial expression before. I'm terrified, and then I find a lump in my breast. And so I prayed, and the house sold really quickly, and I moved to a rental, and he suddenly changed back to his normal self, and made out it was because I'd found the cancer, and made out he was on board for me and my daughter. Moved to the rental property with me, and all the while behind my back, just before my mastectomy, he and his family had been preparing and filing a devastating character attack on me in family court that said I was dangerous to children, I'd slipped through the mental health system many years, just a horrible, nasty, vicious character assassination, disparaging my character, just complete lies, but they knew they would be believed because of who they are. They didn't need fact to back it up because of the people in their higher up in their family were so revered, right? What they also used was my ethnicity, being part Maori. And so, unbeknown to me, 2 weeks before I was due for my mastectomy, my child thought she was safe and she'd gotten away, and she thought Daddy was on board. One night he says to me, "I'm going to get some gas," and he took my child in her pyjamas and he never came back. Okay, I'm up all night ringing all the services. I ring SIFs. They ignore me because they've been told that I'm a liar, a con woman, dangerous, right? So this 24-hour emergency system that you're supposed to ring so that they go and collect your child, they don't. Where SIFs is concerned, there are no procedures. There are no correct procedures. It's a very dysfunctional system. You've got social workers in there that are victims of child abuse themselves, who've gone and got their social degree, who have anger management problems because they've never been to counselling and never dealt with their own childhood abuse issues. So those social workers get their social paper. Anybody can do that. And they're not vetted. If you were going to do this correctly in the best interests of the child, you would say, look, if you're a child abuse victim yourself and you want to be in this industry to save children, we need to be clear that you've done the counselling work, the 12-step program to resolve your anger and your baggage, and that you don't bring it into the system. Because then what do? They tell that they're just looking to crucify a parent based on hearsay of a family like I was involved with, and get back at that parent because they're angry and they want to get the bastard parents like what they had when they were growing up. So that's not in the best interests of the child. If you get a social worker who has not been through the counselling, has not done the inner child work — we used to do seminars for this in the 90s, you do the inner child work, you've got a result. There should be a policy in place. Anybody who goes into child service systems, if they're a victim of abuse themselves, they've got to prove that they've been through all the rehabilitation and counselling work, so that they're not just going in crucifying somebody based on little fact because they're angry and they want to get, you know, anybody can ring up and lie about me. And if you're a social worker that is full of hatred towards... So what happened was I got into the child, youth and family system. I was spat on by these two girls and told, F off and go and get your chemo injection. I'm sitting there, I'm skinny, I'm underweight, I'm shaking. I looked like a mental health patient because I was so traumatized at the fact that the mental health system and now SIFs had no consideration for my cancer. I'm thinking, why can't they see if this woman's telling the truth and she's got cancer? You know, the two accusations, I'm saying my child is in danger of being harmed by a paedophile, right? That's a serious charge. Place the child with them, she's going to continue to be sexualized. They're saying place the child with her, she's going to pull a knife on her child and take out several other people. If you are in any system to do with children, you want to make sure you get it right. They're both equally very serious accusations for a child being at risk, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Okay, so you want to make sure you get it right. You don't want to just be taking one side, because they've got all these wonderful people, and one of them's even in child services high up meddled for it. I can see how they would have believed them over me, but if you're a really discerning, well-trained, and see, the government doesn't train our social workers. There's no money, government money, for training and development. There's no public tax money put in to vet that if they're victims themselves, that they're actually stable mm-hmm. from what they've been through. There's no business procedures taught to them. This is the process you go through, especially in a very serious accusational charge like this. You must go through step 1 to 5 in the best interests of that child. So they don't even have anybody like me in there who's training and developing and saying, this is your normal, average, everyday case for a child. It's just a struggle of tug and war between two parents. Sad that the child's going through that. But when you get a case where there's such serious accusations on both sides, as a trainer and developer, I'd be going into SIFs and saying, here's the 10-step plan to discern the truth, because you don't want to be getting it wrong. If you place the child with her, the child's going to get killed. If you place the child with him, child's going to get raped. You want to make sure that you uncover every rock, turn every rock over, and they should be given a implementation plan of how to go through this process to that process to get to the truth in the best interests of that child. They don't have anything like that in there. People who are higher up in my ex-partner's family had the ability and the nobility and the worshippers and the medals to pick up the phone and just be believed. Now, there's currently a dozen cases like mine that they want to take to the UN, the Owen Glenn inquiry. I found out the other day and I said, look, seriously, how many parent suicides are not reaching the media? There were plenty of times I didn't want to live anymore over 10 years being in this situation, watching my child suffer, having cancer, living in abject poverty in a state house, being used as a slave so I can access my child who's always on the edge, right? I said, how many other people? They said, the board shocked, Karen. I said, well, what do you hope to achieve by going to the UN? Well, we had 10 minutes at the UN, we got 30. When we go back with the top 12 cases like yours that are absolutely horrific and shocking, we're hoping that they'll write a report that goes against the government report, Paula Bennett's report, or whoever it is, Paula Benefit. And then we can challenge the government. Say, well, the UN says actually the opposite to what the government reports say about how children and these systems, how well these systems are working. So I agreed to give her my story. I said, I'm not going to waste my time with any more systems unless you can guarantee me that there'll be an outcome and there'll be something tangible that you can go to government with. So that's their agenda, is hopefully they can get the UN to write a conflicting report to what we as New Zealand citizens are getting from our government where child services are concerned.
You know, the problem is, whenever you've got cases like this where you're talking about legal, lawful behaviour, systems of this nature, there is the propensity the whole way through the process, through the commission of the crime, through to the prosecution and the verdict, to not say anything or do anything outside that's basically to keep everything secret. Don't go to the media, don't make it public, because then it just turns into a massive clusterfuck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, I'm starting to wonder about this. What if the system and all the legal training and all of that kind of stuff is set up that way so it actually benefits and keeps secret the scumbags, so that if they actually do wind up in court or something like that, nobody or the media will really even hear about it because it's a huge important
case. No, because when you've got my in-law who's responsible for writing the legal systems, he's writing it to protect the abuser.
And himself.
So you then get into the family court system, right? You then go from child, the abuse of child, youth and family, who again, judge, jury, executioner, no procedures to discern the truth for the, in the best interest of the child, no procedures or philosophy or doctrine whatsoever. Well, in the best interest of the child.
If you have a system that's designed to at least help perpetuate a scumbaggery element within it without it being exposed, why would you want all your people to be trained in discerning fact from fiction?
No, because then you'd actually be cultivating, protecting children, having a healthy society of the next generation, because children are our future. And that's not what, as we know, Vinny, that's not what superclass want. They want dysfunctional people.
Yeah.
They want the chaos. They want the rioting. They want the dysfunction, okay?
And also you'd be threatening their supply of fresh victims.
Of fresh meat, yeah. Sorry to put it in such crude terms, but it is, as I said, okay, when I went through these systems, I then went to the family court system. Now, in the high court system, if I accuse you of, say, beating me up, I've got to go to the police, they've got to get the information, then based on that information, they charge you, arrest you, and you go to court. Here we are, I'm a parent. I get thrown into in a unit without an inquest, without a trial. I get all my rights taken away for, I'm in prison for 3 weeks, based on, I actually said to the mental health, your business procedures suck. And they looked at me like, what do you mean? And I said, well, my family members are ringing in, his family members are ringing in. How do you discern that they're not the nut jobs that are pathological liars? Where's your business process to discern? I said, for example, my mother and sisters have embezzled money, have gotten away with crimes for years. They're going to ring in and do me over because I'm a threat to exposing them. I said, so when you get a whole bunch of calls about a person, how do you know that you're not dealing with the psychopath on the phone? And they just looked at me because they knew that I was intelligently trying to address a fact that they hadn't even considered. We're talking about psychiatrists who just write down every little thing you say while you're talking to them and then diagnose you with having some sort of ego problem. And that's what they did with me, because I was actually intelligently trying to address the lack of procedure. I said, you know, this is criminal. I'm just stuck in here because of a bunch of people got together to conspire against me because they want to hide their own crimes, and I'm the threat to them because I might yell up about it. So then you go to SIS, same thing. No procedures to discern which parent's telling the truth. They should be ringing professionals, but they tend to listen to family members. Now, how many families do you know that are the Waltons or the Brady Bunch?
Mm.
Very few. Everybody's got a rotten apple in their family. Everybody's got one or two psychos or one or two bullies or you know. So then I get into the SIFs, same thing. They'll just take one side and they'll crucify and abuse. SIFs was abusive towards me. It was like, it's good you're dying of cancer. They may as well have said it. You're a horrible, revolting, gutter whore, scarlet woman who's destroyed all that. My sister's basically projected their psychological profile onto me. They're very practiced at it because they've done it to me all my life, right? So instead of going, hang on a minute, she's got cancer and she's done it. There's no business procedures. So again, you've got that system. They just take one side and then the victim gets crucified, basically.
I spoke to a SIFS worker one time. I was criticising SIFS and the practices that they're conducting, and she's one of these good SIFS workers that actually does know how to discern and does
good
things.
There are good SIFS workers.
However, She, amidst the denial that SIFs is a bad system and what have you, and that there's good people in there and all of this kind of thing, she eventually laxed up and said, actually, yes, the system is failing children. And in her opinion, what one of the main causes of this was, upper management and heads of departments were very rarely ever frontline staff. They don't know what...
You mean and before they moved up the hierarchy, they were never frontline, so they don't have
They come
that.
From the business world straight into
right,
that
okay,
role
so
kind
they,
of
they, they're not quali- the, So they're not qualified, Vinny. They're not, in no way qualified and knowledgeable. And also, another thing I'd like to say is, in the family court system as well, it's the same thing. What happens is, if you're... I used to work for Telecom. In Telecom, there's not, you know, 9,000 employees in the day in the 90s. You've got a whole department of human resources that will tell you how well you're performing. We will measure your performance, right? In these government systems, you get SIS workers who start to get, I'm really good at these cases. I know so because I got a child back off. So that no one's watching them, no one's overseeing them. They become megalomaniacs because they actually get a false sense of how good they are at their job when they actually really are underperforming.
Power trip.
And so the government doesn't put in any money for, as teachers and developers, we know you can never stop learning. We're trained that you don't get a big head, because if you think you know everything, you're stuck. You're screwed. If you think you know everything, you're screwed, because somebody will come along and topple you off your pedestal. So what we do is we say, you don't get to measure your own performance. We will measure that for you and we'll facilitate in your development, because you can never stop excelling. Mm. You can never stop bettering yourself, not till the day you die. Now, this isn't put into the development of their staff. So what you get is you get people who are isolated in SIFs in the family court. Family court lawyers become very dysfunctional and very egotistical and very psychopathic too, because they're the upper class with a university degree and you're just a mother that's a waitress, or you're just a lower socioeconomic mother, and you know, and then they get, you know, they do see a lot of horrible parenting, and they do, and but then they start to judge everybody as all being of one ilk. So there's no oversight to keep developing professionals.
Yeah. One thing that I've discovered in interviewing many people who've been trying to expose these kinds of fields and failings in the social services and what have you, is that just investigating it, just hearing about these stories and things of that nature, is inherently traumatic. The caseworkers need caseworkers because of their job.
Yes, this is absolutely true. In counselling, in psychiatric field, years ago I dated a young man and his mother was 60, and I said, why is your mum in bed? What's wrong? He said she's been a psychologist for 40 years, and after a while they go a bit, they hear so much horrible stuff, they go a bit batty themselves. Now, back in the 70s, early 80s, they didn't have counsellors need to be counselled, because that's what I hear you saying. SIFs workers need to be counselled. They should all be given off 3 months off a year, like teachers in the school system. They should have that human resources department where counsellors can say, "Are you all right? You've had ten really traumatic cases this year. We want to support you." And that person can say, "Look, I actually need 6 months off. I have a funeral director friend, right? Years of it." Every time he had to bury a child or reconstruct the face of somebody that had died tragically, or he'd have to take 6 months off and sell cars just to have a break. So the people in this field that are getting all this horrible, horrible traumatic stories, it's true, they actually need counsellors, and they need to be given time off if they need to. I think there was a policeman years ago in New Zealand who went to court. He was a photographer of horrific murders with police. He ended up having mental health issues. And I hate that stigma. He wasn't mentally ill, but he had depression from, you know, crime scenes that he had to photograph. And they never gave him counselling. And that's when they actually, New Zealand, started to say, we need to give these heroic people in these fields that deal with really trauma-based material, we need to give them support to make sure they don't become unwell. themselves. And the government, our tax dollars just are not going to go into what matters the most for these children and victims and parents who are victims.
Just as long as we keep paying the interest on the foreign debt, eh?
The family court system is so abusive. Okay, so in the High Court, I get to charge you with policing. In the family court, same thing, adversarial system. Unbelievable. It should be an inquisitorial system for children. So an adversarial system is exactly what you have in High Court. It's vicious. The parent that gets the case in first to disparage your character on hearsay is believed. The judge passes the child. 9 times out of 10, the judges know that they're having to pass the child to the abuser, because 9 times out of 10, the first parent that files is the one that's abusing the kid, right? Now, I learnt this when I worked for Every Child Counts campaign, okay? the judges go out on stress leave, because a lot of good judges want the system changed, because they know the way the system has to work is I have to temporarily give the child to this person until the other person comes back to defend themselves. Our court system is so backed up, you don't get in for 6 months. So that means your child is either being whacked over the head by a piece of, or being harmed sexually. Okay?
The trusted
parent, meanwhile, is going through a whole lot of psychological problems, no sleep, anxiety, panic attacks. And if you're a woman, you can be held ransom to putting out sexually in order to access your child that's being abused for 6 months until the court gets you back in, okay? Most women by that 6 months have either taken their own life because they can't watch their child suffer anymore. This is the court system, and you know why the court system is backed up? Because our statistics in New Zealand are shameful. Our statistics for child abuse are shameful. Everybody thinks it's brown people. Until now, I'm telling the truth. Because let's look at it. Brown people, low socioeconomic, no money, no connections to cover up. And they're normally victims of the same crime, perpetrating the same crime. That's a whole psychological side that I won't go into. Just like get the wife beater produces a wife beater, right? Now, again, there's not everybody in the family is going to turn out to be a wife beater, okay? But some people do. So what you've got is the lower socioeconomic don't have the connections and political connections and the monetary wealth in the family to hide their crimes. That's why we always, and we end up with this belief system, it's always brown people, so that nobody will ever believe that a white-collar corporate would be doing this. So we don't see them trotted out on TV, Vinnie.
Yeah, I get that. It's rich man's justice. It's a beautiful thing. Now, we're going to go and take us a wee little break, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be back shortly to expand on these scumbaggery elements in the New Zealand system and various other systems at the same time. I very hope you very much enjoy this, because, oh goodness, it's just so wonderful to hear people speaking the truth, even though it might be horrible and send you into fits of depression and a fetal position and stuff of that nature. Hey, look, everything that you suffer really sucks, but it's necessary for development. And I hope that by listening to people who have suffered, it will accelerate your development, ladies and gentlemen, as it does mine, by removing these wonderful little soft cushions that we've created to ourselves. We'll be right back.
That's why, darling, it's incredible that someone so unforgettable thinks that I am unforgettable too.